The London, Edinburgh, London Long Distance Cycling Podcast with Daniela Harder and Adam Young.
Welcome to the LAL London, Edinburgh, London Podcast and an occasional chat about all things London, Edinburgh, London.
So in the coming months, we'll be taking a look at everything from how to get a place to ride or help out, what sort of preparation you should do yourself and your bike, as well as tackle some of the more common questions people have about Britain's most challenging cycling event.
And today we're kicking off with a chat with LEL's organiser, Daniel Webb, and a few 2022 vets.
So we're trying to get a sense of what people should expect and how they can get involved with this event.
And even if 1,500 kilometres in 2025 isn't on your agenda, we hope to whet your appetite for riding long distances.
So, Daniela, you rode in 2022, sort of still last year. What do you remember most about that event?
I think one of the most impressive memories was riding past the Welcome to Scotland sign, thinking, oh, I did this. And it was just such a great feeling to go through all the beautiful countryside by bike and seeing everything and then hitting that sign and thinking, yes. So that was something that really stuck with me. What's your biggest memory or experience, Adam?
I've done it three times. I've done the last three editions, all the ones Daniel has organised. So we'll suggest that Daniel's doing a great job of organising. Probably the biggest experience was 2017 when I sort of babysat my dad and took him around for 1,500 kilometres. So he hadn't done anything like that before. So he sort of was up for doing it. So I said I'd go and ride with him. So we rode together for the whole event, and he'd smashed himself up the previous year, or rather, the previous year someone had, he'd had an accident in France when someone had driven into him, so he was sort of quite nervous about doing this and getting back on the bike, so it was really good getting him around.
Oh, hi Daniel, thank you for joining us today. So tell us a bit about your LEL involvement. How far back does your experience go?
I think it's nearly 18 years now. I was thinking about this morning. Yeah, 2005. I just started getting into riding Audax events and was looking at the Audax UK website and noticed this event, London, Edinburgh, London, had just happened. And was just thinking to myself, and I'll be honest, right from the outset, thought to myself, cool, I'd love to organise something like that. I bet that would be loads of fun. But obviously, it had an organiser already, and I was very much getting into cycling. So it was always my plan to ride in 2009, and I had a couple of great seasons. And then I bust my knee, basically, so I couldn't ride. The organiser very kindly gave me a refund, and then a few weeks later, she asked me if I'd be interested in running a control point for the event. So in 2009, I found myself in Thorn, the spiritual home of Audax, just outside, or of LEL, just outside Doncaster in a rugby club for 4 or 5 days. And I absolutely loved it. 2 or 3 months later, I pitched to Audax UK to run the event in the following years, and I've been the organiser ever since.
Oh, that's quite impressive. So given that it takes up a lot of time in your life, because it must be massive effort to organise, how do you describe it to people? So when someone asks, what are you doing all this time, what are you telling them?
I think what's always really appealed to me about Audax riding and randonnées in general is that it's more than just a race or a challenge. It's very much about the whole coming together of people, those who organise, those who volunteer, and those who ride. And to be honest, they're really the same people. People ride events, they help out at events. And so what you get is you just get a whole feeling of community, much deeper than just entering lots of events that, you know, you quite fancy when you're cycling. And I've really tried to take that ethos throughout London, Edinburgh, London, as it's grown as an event. So when I think of it, I think of it as a challenge for all of us. It's the challenge is to get as many people to Edinburgh and back again, and they can't do it on their own. They can't do it just as riders. They have to work together, but we have to work together to support them, and they have to work with us. So it's a whole group community challenge, and I think that makes it quite special, and I think it just adds a very different sheen to this event and a very different quality that you just don't get anywhere else.
So you sort of talk about getting people to Edinburgh and back. Presumably it's sort of like there's a time limit on there, but you're not encouraging people to sort of it being a race in any way. It's just about getting there and back.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, people have a minimum time limit and a maximum time limit, so that people can't race at the front of the event, although they can't race very quickly. And then similarly, they can't dawdle too long either. So you have to keep yourself disciplined and ride at a steady pace. I think fast touring is what some people describe it as. And I think that lack of a race and that upper limit, which is comfortably achieved by a lot of riders of quite high calibre, it just creates a very different atmosphere there, because there's no prize for coming first, because everybody is given the same attention and the same quality of service from us as organiser and volunteers. There's no incentive, really. There's no incentive to be first. The challenge is your own personal challenge, and the challenge of somebody who just manages to get round in the time limit, or indeed the person who gets round the event 2 days late, is every bit as valuable to us as the person who comes first and second.
Do you keep times at all? Do you record times, or is it really just a not race?
We do record times, and people know their times, and that's recorded on their brevet card, the card that we record their passage through the event at all the control points. But we don't publish those event times at all. When we publish the finish list, it's alphabetical from A to Z. But people know how they've done. They know where they sit in the group. They know whether or not they've performed as well as they wanted to, or whether or not they had a setback, but really we just don't go there. And I think even in the discussions online in the various groups dedicated to London, Edinburgh, London, I think talking about your time is generally frowned upon,
which I think gives it that special sort of ethos, because I know that for PBP, for example, it's slightly different. There is a lot more emphasis on the time, whereas this one really is trying to get round within the time there.
Absolutely. And I think that kind of reflects the very different challenges that people face. If you're an ex-semi-pro racer and you're physical prime and you've trained well, LEL is going to be a far easier event. If you're, say, 60, you're new cycling, you've just been doing it a couple of years, it's going to be a far, far tougher challenge for you. So who's to say that the person who finished first worked harder or did more or overcame more adversity? It might just be just another event for them. For another person, it might be a life-changing experience. I don't think times really reflect the full experience that we have as organisers and riders. So it's not very useful. It's not very useful for any of us.
So how much preparation? I mean, we're talking about this still being an event of getting people to Edinburgh and back. Presumably people are still going to need to put some preparation in, even though it's not a race.
Absolutely. And I think for an event like this, you have to develop a much wider skill set than if you were, say, riding, 100, 200 kilometre events. It's not just your physical fitness, though. Obviously, if you ride faster, you get round faster and you have to spend less time actually cycling. But you need mental fortitude as well. I think over the course of 3, 4, 5 days, you're going to have, you're going to feel elated at times, you're going to feel joyous, and other times you're going to feel really fed up, you're going to feel tired. So you need to develop that fortitude and to understand your own self and your own highs and lows, and that realisation that things might be bad now, but they might be great in 4 or 5 hours' time, so you've just got to stick on with things. You need to learn how to use your bike. You need to learn what equipment that you need. You definitely need to learn how to navigate. You might need to learn how to cycle at night, for example. And that only comes with experience. So if anyone's listening to this now and thinking, what do I need to do? How do I start this? I would just say, just get on your bike and ride. Ride in the night, ride long distances, ride further than you'd plan to on a day out, for example. And it's only through testing yourself that way when you develop the resilience to be able to not only complete LEL, but to thrive it and to really enjoy it.
So you think some people thought that 2022 was especially tough, but I suppose one could say that after each. Was it any different to the ones before in your experience? Was it tougher?
Yes, it was. There's no doubt about that. It was, I think, for a couple of reasons. First of all, we routed some of the event through hills in Yorkshire. Very, very beautiful hills, but perhaps a little too, let's say, scenic, shall we say, for an event like this. And I think a lot of people found that quite frustrating. Similarly, in Scotland as well, we placed a new section of the route in that crossed over the Forth Bridge twice and went through the centre of Edinburgh, which on paper, it just sounds wonderful. And it was, and we tested it, and it looked great. But I think riders just found it quite hard work, picking their way through Edinburgh, picking their way through Queensbury and over the bridge. It just wasn't really appreciated in the way that we thought it would be. Mm. And then, of course, the weather. We had, well, on the face of it, glorious weather. The photographs from the event look amazing. It just looks like Spanish holidays or something, you know, the glorious sunshine and the brown fields. But this is Britain, and whilst we have a very international field, most of our riders are from Britain, and 35-40 degrees centigrade is a challenge. A lot of people rode in the night, a lot of people slept during the day, but crucially, I think a lot of people after 2 or 3 days just gave up because the heat absolutely got to them. So yes, I think it was a particularly tough event. The finish rate was, strange enough, it was higher than the previous edition, only a little bit, but it was higher. So but yes, I think we very much reflected on that, and we've made quite a few changes for the next edition, which I think will be very, very welcome, both for new riders and those returning like yourself, I hope, Danielle.
Yeah. Well, I mean, the hills were certainly scenic. Is it going to be any easier than next time round?
It will certainly be. I think it will be flatter and more straightforward. Damon and I tested some of the sections around North Yorkshire earlier this summer, and we found it absolutely joyous cycling, to be honest. Once you leave Moulton, well, there are no flat routes out of Moulton. You have to take a few hills in there, but once we've cleared those through the Hawardian Hills, it's just beautiful cycling. It's nice, flat, quiet lanes. Pretty village, another pretty village, still another pretty village. I'm really looking forward to that. I think it'll be a really nice interlude between the sort of rolling hills around the Yorkshire Dales and some of the hills in the Pennines that come a little bit later. I think the riders, I think you'll all love it, actually.
Are we going back to Edinburgh again after last time? Because I admit I was one of the people who was less impressed with that section.
No, we won't be going into Edinburgh again. I think we've ditched that entirely. So the current plan is to use the same route as we used in 2017. So we picked up the cycle path just outside the south of Edinburgh near the famous Roslyn Chapel in the village of Roslyn. And we take a nice, cute cycle track just into the south of Edinburgh. That's the plan at the moment anyway. So it will be far more straightforward in terms of navigation next time. No central Edinburgh, no Forth Bridge, no Dunfermline, no Edinburgh suburbs to have to contend with.
Yeah, for me, it's kind of like, it's what's between London and Edinburgh, which is the interest rather than the London bit or the Edinburgh bit. It's like, it's the journey between those two places and then the return journey as well.
Absolutely. And I think, you know, South Edinburgh, I mean, Edinburgh's a beautiful city, but most cities are the same on the outskirts anyway. So, you know, at the moment, psychologically, you will pass a sign that says, "Welcome to Edinburgh." And you know, so you will be in Edinburgh. You can have your dinner, have a haggis supper, and then we head on back into the Scottish lowlands, because I think this year the loops through Scotland are an absolute treat and a real ride highlight.
They were, yeah, absolutely breathtakingly beautiful. So what's any other changes? What's this about refreshment stops? Is that something new or something that to be expanded from last one?
We've got two big changes this year. I mean, first of all, can I just go back to Scotland? I talked about the Scottish Lowlands. We have a new route director for 2025, who has transformed the route through Scotland. He's taken those 40 or 50 kilometres out of the route that we needed to do to go to Dunfermline. And he's created a series of three loops through southern Scotland. So we head out to the village of, or the town of Hoyk, over an absolutely gorgeous climb. I don't think it has a name, but it's mellow. You barely know you're climbing it, and then you... It's a screaming descent down into Hoyk. It's fast and it's easy. There's no traffic. And then we take a series of very mellow climbs past St Mary's Lock to head down into Moffat. I think for me, that's the absolute highlight of the event for 2025, that 75-kilometre section, before we take our classic route through the Beef Tub to South Edinburgh, and then back down the route that everybody knows and loves through Innerleith and Estilmuir. That's going to be an absolute treat, that is, for the riders. But to help them through those Scottish sections and throughout the route as well, we're picking up on something that worked really well last time. Those of you who rode the event in 2022 know that we had to contend with a last-minute road closure, which resulted in most of you having to essentially cross the highest route in England along another enormous climb to get through to Alston and on to Brampton. At the very last minute, we pulled in a couple of local businesses to run overnight refreshment stops for riders, and those stops proved to be really, really popular with riders, and very, very lucrative for the cafe owners as well. So it's an absolute win-win. So we've kind of started to embed ourselves into the community. So this time round, I think so far we have about 19 refreshment stops and pop-up dormitories that will be open for the whole time that riders are passing through. You'll be able to buy hot and cold food, hot and cold drinks. You'll be able to fill up your water bottles, you'll be able to use the loo. In a lot of these venues are village halls, so we're going to put out about 20 or 30 beds as a sort of crash pad if you feel that you just want to grab a few winks on the way. So this time round, you should never be more than 30 or 40 kilometres away from food and drink whenever you need it. So at a stroke, essentially, we've doubled the number of facilities that's available to the riders on the event. And we think that will be very popular indeed, both with ourselves and with the local communities who increasingly come out and support this event.
That starts to sound very much like a mini version of Paris-Brest-Paris, where you have these big checkpoints on Paris-Brest-Paris every sort of 100 kilometres, but you're constantly riding through villages with support on offer, and sort of the community is very much involved there as well, and it sort of sounds a little bit like that is the aim.
Yeah, That's absolutely right, Adam. That's exactly what we're trying to develop here. This real virtuous circle, I think, of that community support, encouraging the event, encouraging the riders, and I'm really keen to develop that as we go ahead. I see no reason why London, Edinburgh, London can't get that same sort of roadside support one day.
So from what you're saying, Daniel, it sounds very much like we're heading towards a sort of Paris-Brest-Paris, PBP sort of type of situation for LEL for 2025, which would be fantastic.
Yeah, that pop-up cafe at the end of the first long climb was an absolute lifesaver. And I thought everyone in there, the people who worked there, were having a good time as well. So I think that's a great idea. Right, that's probably a good time to bring in two people who've got some first-hand experience of this as volunteer and rider. Kirsty, who wrote this in 2022, and Damon, who is running the Love Control. Kirsty, would you like to tell us a bit about your coming to this event, and if it was new to you, how did you find it? How did you find the support and the controls?
Well, I should probably start by saying I don't really see myself as much of a cyclist, or certainly didn't until I did this. I never cycled as a kid apart from a paper round. And then about 14 years ago, I sold my car and started commuting to work. And I was looking for a challenge because sometimes, especially this time of year, your commute can get a bit samey, 7 miles on the same bit of road. And I was like, how can I make this interesting? And I thought, I know, set myself a challenge. And I had done a couple of sportifs, but I didn't find I had to train for them. The commute was enough. So I thought, right, I need something bigger that's actually going to force me to go out at the weekends and ride big rides. So that's why I entered LEL. I rarely just go out for a ride just for the sake of riding. It's always got to be like to the shop.
You're absolute like classic Audax rider, basically. Honestly, everything you say about how you got into this and your approach to it and what you do is just screams Audax. Yeah, it's no wonder. I mean, you know, I know we don't talk about times and everything, but I don't appreciate Daniela. Like Kirsty was the only woman to enter the 100-hour group, and she was the first woman back by quite some distance. Yeah, you know, she's not even trying. Yeah, so. You know, it's just like insane. So, you know, it's absolutely, it's classic Audax. It's brilliant. So no one, you did really well.
If you're going to enter, you might as well enter like the best thing you can.
Yeah, exactly. So so I think you'll be an absolute inspiration, I think, for just the sort of rider that I like entering LEL. So to be honest, so. Brilliant. Thank you very much indeed.
Yes. Well, that's certainly a challenge from a seven-mile commute to 1,500 kilometres. And how did you find the support of the controls? What were your experiences there?
I found it amazing. The fact that I could get on my bike and literally I rarely bought anything in between. I just went from control to control and I was provided with everything I needed, as much food as I could eat. Every time I got to a control, I ate a full, like, three-course meal. You know, I slept at some, I was given blanket. You know, it was just such an easy setup. Mm. I don't really know what I anticipated, but what I got was perfect, basically.
As a volunteer, Damon, this must be something you'd love to hear. Does this reflect your experience of the riders that came in?
Oh, absolutely. It's lovely to hear words like perfect being used. It's not always perfect, and I think it's important to acknowledge that. And it's difficult. Well, you only get one shot every 4 years to try and get it right and to try and iron out some of the things that didn't go so smoothly the first time round. But absolutely. It's really nice to see the people who rock in fresh as a daisy and they're about to finish, and that's great, and they've ticked LEL off. I think the thing that keeps the controllers going is the ones that come in and need essentially rebuilding from scratch with all the TLC in the universe and some soothing words and a pat on the back, some sandwiches in the saddlebag, and off you go. You've still got it in you. It's riders like Kirsty who arrive, and where we are in Lincolnshire, you know, people are starting to be able to imagine the finish line. But we meet some people who are at their absolute limits, who are physically completely wrecked, mentally perhaps in a dark place. And it's always surprising and really heartwarming about how people, throughout all that, maintain, you know, a sense of feeling incredibly grateful and are incredibly thankful for the support that the volunteers bring. And by and large, we see that through everyone who participates. All of our riders are always incredibly appreciative of the volunteers. And I think that's what keeps us going as a team.
So Kirsty, sort of, you've talked about the sort of controls and stuff. So what were your sort of highlights of the ride? Was it the controls or was it the route or something else?
I think for me, it was the other riders. Because my rides are commutes, I just ride on my own most of the time. Admittedly, my son rode with me for 2 years because he was at the same school I worked at. But even then, he was off ahead racing past me. So to be riding an event and I rode slower, but controlled fast. I don't know if that's a phrase. I think it's a phrase. So the same people... same people were overtaking me every section, and it was quite nice, and you got to know them. And then by the time I sort of passed Edinburgh, we'd formed a bit of a group, and the four of us sort of rode together for the rest of it. And, you know, I mean, you finish that ride and you sort of consider them like friends. And I've not spoken to them since, but I know that if I saw them again at a future event, you would be friends with them. And I think that was a lovely experience.
Presumably there were some points which weren't so great. You got any you want to share, or do you not want to put people off?
Well, no, I mean, I guess it would be a good tip for people. I got my bike serviced before I went because I knew that wasn't my strength. I took it into bike shop, they did everything. And I stupidly put some fresh cleats on myself, and I obviously hadn't done a good job. So by the time, I don't know, I think it was partway through the second day, I was in a lot of pain. And I suspected it was that, but kept riding anyway, and eventually started to accept it wasn't, rode with one shoe on, one shoe up. Just stupid things when you look back at it, and finally stopped to try and fix it, and almost was about to give up, and yet met one of the guys that I then rode with for the rest of it. And I think if I hadn't got chatting to him and he said, oh, look, just ride with me for a bit, see how you feel, I may have stopped there and then. But it was that sort of support from a total stranger that kept me going.
Yeah, I mean, it's like going up into the controls where it's total strangers, and those strangers are helping us all as we're doing these rides. So we turn up and sort of Damon's there helping us or organising his control and getting his volunteers to help us. And what sort of highlights do you see from being in those controls, Damon?
It's really interesting. It's interesting to hear about the camaraderie amongst the riders, because it's really mirrored in the volunteers. We're probably much more of a disparate group than you would give us credit for. We have a lot of volunteers who have previously ridden the event and are giving something back, acknowledging that LEL is an event that couldn't happen without its volunteers, and that they're a sort of vital and an integral part to making the event the success that it is. We get family members of riders, some more enthusiastic than others, or at least at the start. Usually by the time we've finished, people have very much enjoyed their experience. But some of our volunteers don't have much of a connection, if any, to long distance cycling at all, and actually come because they're the kind of people who just like to volunteer and like to just do something altruistic to help other people achieve their goals and dreams. And it's a really interesting bunch that we come together, we have to spend a week in each other's company, and we all have to try and achieve the same goals. So you build your own little tight-knit communities, and it's delightful. It's delightful to to build that up over the course of the week. And it's nice to see that our volunteers often give us outstanding feedback and come back to the same controls, event in and event out. So little communities that hang together between events and over the course of the years. It's a really a sort of exciting and thrilling time. I think there's what probably goes unnoticed is that we come together as a team well in advance of the event starting to set the controls up, and for a long time afterwards nurturing those riders who have out of time but are still pushing themselves to finish, and that we're there for each other, and that it is an emotional experience for us when we finish, I think, just as much as it is for the participants.
May I jump in here, actually, Damon? I think you've hit on a really interesting point there. That's one that I've pondered. When I first was involved in this in 2009, at the event, end of the event, the next day when I was at home, I found myself crying. Happy crying, but crying. And I just put it down to stress relief from all the work that we'd done previously. But this seems to happen at every event. And it's not just me either. I found myself in the company of a German volunteer who was part of our roaming cruise around the country. And she got back to London and she was in absolute floods of tears. And she's like, why am I crying? I don't understand it. And I think what LEL does, certainly as the teams of the volunteers, is that they form this very intense community, and that sharing communality is something that you don't get as much in life as you may have done 30 or 40 years ago. We all live much more atomized lives now. So these tight little groups that have to work together very closely can be quite emotional, I think, for volunteers. It really does offer something, an intensity of experience that I don't think even the riders necessarily quite appreciate. It's quite something. It's very, very different from you know, rattling a can or any other sort of voluntary work.
You're going to end up with a waiting list for volunteers rather than riders if you sell it like this. It sounds great.
Which is what we want. But I think this is a really good point about... you know, volunteers come together and we form a tight family, and we're all working towards the same goals. And then if you add in just the emotions around the event, that we've got people who are pushing themselves to their limits and beyond and trying to really strive for something that's really important for them, a really big goal. And when you're kind of helping people achieve that, you can't help but take some of that emotion home with you as well. And it doesn't surprise me that a lot of us just feel completely overwhelmed by the end of the event. I think we pick up some of those feelings from our riders and participants.
Yes.
The amazing thing is that Damon's an absolute star controller, because, you know, I think that, again, it's just that getting that message about the camaraderie and the teamship is really important, because without that it just wouldn't work. So, you know, that's what makes it work, really.
By the end of the event, we have picked up a lot of the feelings and emotions of our riders and participants, and we've got our own feelings of being a community that's come together and bonded tightly and then had to say our farewells. And as a result, I think we feel a lot of those emotions and often find ourselves just overwhelmed by the time we're packing up and moving on our way.
So now that we've heard all these exciting stories about the past events, if someone's now thinking about getting ready for the next one in 2025, what do you think, Adam? What should they start to prepare now?
I think at the moment, it depends what background someone has, how much cycling they are doing already. I mean, Kirsty sort of said her riding for her LEL was a sort of 7-mile commute. And so obviously for her, then it was, she can speak for herself, but I imagine it's more getting used to riding at night and things like that. Whereas for other people, it might be, if you're coming from India, it might be getting sort of thinking about what it would be like riding in the UK. For instance, that's going to be quite a different experience. So I think sort of to give a general answer is quite difficult. Kirsty, I mean, what would your advice be, sort of having come from this as a sort of relative novice background?
I think almost not overthink it. Just get out there riding. I really was surprised at how much just that 7 miles backwards and forwards each day prepared me to do what I did. Because you were just used to getting on your bike again and again. Okay, not with as much gap as I'm used to, but I'm used to riding in all weathers. And you mentioned maybe not being able to ride at night, but parents' evenings, I'd already done some of that. So, you know, if you're short for time, don't underestimate the effect of just getting out for half an hour or an hour and getting outside. Maybe, I think these days people like their Zwifts and Turbos, which up till now I've managed to avoid. But, you know, it's getting outside, being used to all elements. I think that's probably more important than any particular training sort of pattern.
Yes, I think you're touching on something really important there. That's one of the things that I tell people as well, is you can't really make up outside riding. Even if you're on a spin bike on the turbo, there is always going to be something extra when you're actually on the road and you have potholes to contend with in wind and all those things. So yes, I think you're quite right. Actually going outside and riding is the main thing. When we look at sort of preparations and key dates and things people need to bear in mind if they want to gear up for the next ride, Daniel, what are some of the key milestones that you could tell us about that people need to take into account?
The key date to watch out for, Daniela, is the 3rd of January 2025. That's when we open for main entries. It's going to be a ballot and you'll have 2 weeks to enter the ballot, and then we'll draw out names at random from that. And invite those people to enter the event. A lot of riders already have a guaranteed place, though. Those riders who are long-standing members of Audax UK, those who volunteered at the previous event, those who have ridden certain qualifying rides through Les Randonneurs Mondiaux, those people can all enter directly on the 3rd of January. They don't need to enter the ballot. And there's a key tip, actually, for somebody who's listening to this podcast now and thinking, I'm not going to be ready for 2025, but I really fancy this. What I suggest you do is volunteer instead. Volunteer for the event in 2025. See if you like the vibe and who we are. And there you go. You can start training, guaranteed a place in 2029. That really brings you into the ethos of who we are then. So those are the dates I'd be watching out for.
Yes, the volunteering, the one before, is definitely a great idea to get into it and then get the guaranteed place. When can volunteers sign up? Is that similar to the riders?
You can volunteer now, actually. We already have 250 people signed up to volunteer for the event in 2025. So if you just Google London, Edinburgh, London volunteer, you'll find the page very quickly. It's a short form on there. And we'll be in touch soon after you enter that to thank you for that. Then early 2025, we'll allocate you to a control point or to one of the mobile teams, and you'll get an email from Damon or one of our other controllers bringing you into the family.
So we've got our volunteers, so we know they're signing up. If I were to go through the ballot, sort of, would I find out, 2 weeks afterwards, or is it going to be a bigger lag than that?
That's right, yeah. It'd be about 2 weeks after you enter the ballot.
And when will people have to pay? Is that when they find out that they have a place, or when they enter the ballot, or at what point?
That's right. What will happen is, obviously, you enter the ballot on the 3rd of January. It closes on the 17th of January. Hopefully, on the 18th of January, you'll receive an email from me saying, congratulations, you've got a place. Follow the link, pay your entry fee, and you can go straight into the rider area. You can nominate your start times, your bag drop locations. We'll talk about these in future podcasts, I hope. But the whole thing should be instantaneous. So once you get that email, you can be in and picking things within minutes.
Can I rudely ask then, how much is it actually going to be? Have you thought about that? Have you got a price, or is it still up in the air?
Oh, no, it's on the website. It's £489.
£489, like 5 days of being looked after. I mean, well, It's fantastic value.
I think it's an absolute bargain, to be honest. I mean, you know, we really do. It's. I mean, the lodgings are modest, but the food is plentiful. There's tons of it, and all the TLC you get from the volunteers for a 5-day event. I think it's incredible value for money.
I mean, Kirsty said she didn't spend any money on the ride.
No, I mean, to be fair, when it got really hot on those, second to last day or whatever, I must confess I bought the odd ice cream. But apart from that, that was about it, really.
Is Daniel not providing ice cream next time based on the heat waves?
Well, maybe.
It'll be raining next time, won't it?
Absolutely.
So we know how to sort of pay for these events. We know how to go and enter, so... Are you, Kirsty, Daniela, are you sort of thinking of doing this again next time? And sort of what are your plans for 2024?
I would recommend riding a whole series, the Randonneur series with an Audax, if you can, get it up to 600 kilometres just to get into the swing of things. If you aren't an experienced rider, I think that's probably a good way to get into it and then build it up that way. I think that worked for me last time. Just keep riding, really. Yeah.
A bit like you said, just try and build them up gradually. There's loads of using the calendar on the Audax website, and you can just pick your distances, your areas. And I see it as a chance to ride different places, really. Go and see a different area of the country that you wouldn't normally riding.
Yeah,
you're welcome to come and do some of my 200s.
Which ones are they?
One from Greenwich, which goes into Kent, where I think I've probably taken Daniel's idea and feed the riders as much as possible. So that's first Saturday in July, called The Way to the Sea, and then a Essex 200 that goes from Manningtree Station sort of across to Hertfordshire and back.
I'll see you on the Essex one then.
Yeah.
Right, so thank you to our riders and volunteers for sort of giving their words of wisdom. So Daniel, Kirsty, Damon, and it's time to wrap up for the first edition of this podcast.
Yeah, we hope you liked the session. And through the rest of 2024, we're planning some more sessions, especially looking at how to prepare yourself physically and mentally, mechanical things that you might have to consider, and how to avoid issues and some surprises there.
And if you've got burning questions or suggestions about what we should be chatting about, do let us know. We'll try and accommodate your ideas.
And don't forget to check in with the LEL Facebook. No matter how obscure the topic, someone there will have some advice, and particularly about all sorts of lights for the nights. There's lots going to be on there. So let me thank everyone who was involved, Kirsty, Damon, Daniel and Adam. And I hope you enjoyed the podcast and our thoughts and ideas on it, and join us next time.
Thank you, Daniela. We will see you next time. And for the people listening, remember, if you've got questions, do get in touch. We will try and get those answered for you in the forthcoming editions of this podcast.
The London Edinburgh London Long Distance Cycling Podcast is an LEL production. Find out more on our website, londonedinburghlondon.com.